Show presents Scratch a Track,
the podcast where we debate which track to scratch off some of the most known and unknown albums of all time.
We live in an era of singles.
This is an album.
People no longer listen to an album for the work it truly is.
It kind of defines a band.
It's just not something that people relate to nowadays.
We've all gotten the dreaded.
Started out as a game.
Which track on the album would you scratch out if you had to?
Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch a Track podcast presented by the Dude and Grim Show and co-produced by Ivy EST. I'm the Dude.
And I am Grim, and today we are going to be discussing one of my favorites, and that is Pavement's Bright in the Corners. And I was looking for this because I bought this album probably the year it came out on CD. But of course, one CD collection goes. So I found special deluxe edition CDs of Slanted and Enchanted, Crooked Rain, and Wowie Zowie. But then I couldn't find my CD for Bright in the Corners. But then lo and behold,
what?
There it was. The original.
All right, is the disc in there?
The disc is all in right, here too. It's okay. It's,
I need to see the status of the disc. How scratched is it scratched?
I don't think it's too bad. Dude, wow. It's actually in great shape. I don't think it's got a scratch on it. So it
did not make it to the beach.
No, I didn't take this one to the beach. And the cover art's kind of minimalist, but just a little weird, like Pavement stuff would be. So,
all right, cool.
Bright in the Corners, dude. Yeah, that was exciting. I found it at the last second, and I was like, sweet, I can kind of sneak it up in there.
Dude, awesome, man.
So,
well, this is their fourth studio album, released February 11th, 1997. Now, you just said that, you know, you probably got this in 97 when it came out. Was this your first Pavement album that you bought?
Yes. I did not know about Pavement. I found out about Pavement from skateboarding video that I had, Trans World skateboarding video. And they would always just have, you know, music while they had these montages of people skating and
doing
Embassy Row, dude. Kick flips into grinds, dude. They're not doing them separately at this level. This is professional shit here.
The real stuff.
Yeah. But. So I this album, and they tell you who it's almost like an MTV video or something. You know, it tells you who it was. And I remember I found out about a handful of bands from this method, but Pavement was the one that really became like my favorite band. And I like the song so much. I went to the CD store at that point because people weren't really selling records. And I figured I'd find the CD if they had it and buy it just based on the fact that I like that song so much. And it became one of my favorite albums and stuck with me. And subsequently, like I said, I actually own all the Pavement albums on CD. I've been looking.
When did you have vinyl?
Nothing yet, because I've been looking for this one. Like, this is the one I want more than any of the other ones on vinyl.
Okay.
And I look there every time I go, and I don't know if it's out of print or they just don't have it or what, but I have not been able to find Bright in the Corners yet on vinyl. So
interesting. Wow. Well, if anyone knows if they're out there, I mean, we should just check.
I think it is. Yeah. But sure. I haven't found it. And that's one that I am not going to buy a used record of. I want to open that and just drop that needle on there for the first time. Once I get a new stylus, of course.
Dude, that needs to happen real soon.
Well, there's some new
things in the work.
Shit has come to light, and it may in fact happen.
All right. That's what we like to hear. Well, Grim, this was recorded apparently at Mitch Easter's house in North Carolina, and he produced some of REM's early albums from 81 to 84.
I did not know that. That is cool. But I have listened to a couple different podcasts. One of them was talking to Bob Nastanovich, and one was talking to Steve Malcomus. And they both kind of, they asked them about the recording of this album and what it was like.
Cool.
Now, for a while, the band, I think, because Pavement went through a thing where they had, during Slanted and Enchanted in the tour, they had this older guy who produced that album. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but I'll look it up. Gary Young. And he served as the drummer for a while. Yeah, older than them. But he was kind of like a little bit of a drunk and into drugs and just like unreliable and everything. So he kind of hung with them for a while. But by this time, they had got Steve West as the drummer. So this is what people would think of as like the classic Pavement lineup. Steve Malcolmus, Scott Camber, Mark Eibold, Steve West and Bob Nastanovich. That's like the five member band.
The group. Very cool.
As most people would know it. So, yeah. But I think by this point, they kind of lived in different cities and like they would reconvene or whatever if they were going on tour or to record.
Right.
And so I think that's part of the reason they did it at this guy's house. So they're all like staying in this area.
Seems to be a common theme for a lot of bands.
Yeah, and so the recounting of it from Nastanovich and Steve Malkovich was that like it was cool because they just got to hang out and they didn't get to all do that all the time. And so like they said it was a small town and there wasn't a lot to do. So they'd like play basketball a lot and go bowling and just like do just stupid kind of
sounds
shit.
Sounds like something we would do.
Yeah, really.
I like that. Yeah. One thing I kind of just doing just the minimal research, the minimal amount to pass the test.
Yeah. Just going for like a pass fail type of
pretty much.
Yeah. Okay.
Just trying to keep that grade. But dude, it sounds like, so they recorded songs like several different versions and then they would just kind of decide on like, hey, I guess this is the final take or whatever. So did they talk about that at all in the podcast? Like, did they get into sort of any recording processes or anything like that?
A little bit. I think for the most part, they would record as a group for the most part. And, you know, maybe some overdubs here or there. But that was one thing about them is they kind of had, I want to say, a punk sensibility. Not necessarily a punk sound, but a punk sensibility where everything was pretty minimalist. And
they could go raw. They raw dogged it. Yeah.
Dude, they did. And so you can even hear there's a lot of things within different songs that are clearly something else that's put in there for the beginning or an ending. Embassy Row has a very distinct intro. Shady Lane, which on the CD version I have, they never said. Oh, they did say J versus S. No shit. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, that whole J versus S bit at the end, that's clearly something else, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think they talked too much in the podcast about whether that involved actually like splicing different takes together or not, but right. it's certainly possible.
Or it was just like an extended jam.
Yeah. 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 So,
yeah. You got anything else on this? Or do you want to get into the tracks, my friend? Or maybe while we're having this little silence and debating what we're going to do next, all you fans out there could go ahead and give us a
like, subscribe, and comment below.
That would be awesome.
You know, one thing I would like to know that was not really... I mean, unfortunately, the Wikipedia article is not incredibly informative on this one, and I've listened to a lot of things about it and I've read a lot of things about it. I'd like to know if anyone has any idea of some of the instrumentation, because very clearly in the song Blue Hawaiian, that's a Rhodes piano that is easy to pick out, and there's actually photos and stuff of them where they bring one out live, I believe.
Oh, sweet.
For that. But when like in Transport is arranged, I want to know if that's actually somebody playing a flute or if that's Mellotron flutes. I have the feeling it's Mellotron flutes. And the thing is, I'd be surprised if it was anything else because they sound so good. They don't sound too fake.
Okay. I gotcha.
Where the Mellotron is actually a recording of someone playing a real flute. So
right. Right.
They don't talk about that. And I don't think the band even talked about that much in the stuff I heard, which me, I would, cause I'm kind of a dork about that, but I don't know. Yeah. They didn't. So that's okay too.
So yeah, please let us know below.
Yeah.
Track got, time trim.
Almost. Yeah. I mean, I guess this got positive reviews. Which doesn't surprise me, but I feel like it's interesting because it's just so kind of underground.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I heard about them through you, but I don't even think I really got into them until at some point in college. So that was well after. You
know, yeah.
I mean, 97, what were we probably?
Oh, that was after the release of Terror Twilight.
Right. Right.
And, you know, the thing is, they released two singles from it, Stereo and Shady Lane. Now, I don't know that Shady Lane would have been my choice as the second one. Would have been Stereo and Embassy Row, for sure.
Yeah.
They did videos for both of those songs.
Ooh.
The videos, you should watch if, I take it you haven't seen the one for Stereo, but you should watch it because I think it will remind you in parts of the Moore video for Spiritual Divide, the way they do like the green screen effect and with the band playing stuff. The Shady Lane video is just kind of weird, but they do this thing where like Malcolmus is singing, but he doesn't have a head. It's kind of...
Okay. I like what you've done here.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's, yeah. All right. It's, yeah, we can get into the tracks. I don't really know what else to say other than it's just an awesome kind of different album.
Well, then I think speaking of Stereo, since that's the first track on this album, you know, there's a couple things I'd like to know. And I think I mentioned this to you offline a little bit. So the way he sings sometimes and sort of almost verbalizes, he'll kind of speak the words a little bit when you sing. It has a real like Lou Reed feel to me. Like Lou Reed would do that.
I could see that, a
lot. But there's also throughout this album, and they get these sort of weird, almost like weird guitar sounds where it almost deconstructs, like it kind of falls apart.
Oh, absolutely.
And so we were talking about this before and I was like, dude, we've done a podcast on this album and it kind of reminds me of this album and this band a little bit. Dude, Nirvana's In Utero. Like,
You know how
they have those parts where it's just like, it's just not smooth or coherent, but it sounds really cool. Like it's not a critique. I mean, I know that's what was intended.
I'm going to go ahead. Me of that. Yeah, that's awesome. And I could definitely hear that. Now I get the sense that they were probably not the biggest fans of, Nirvana. That's my gut feeling, but,
dude, or at least overly influenced by
the similarity is definitely there in what they do, especially in Stereo. Cause they get some just really, they go for that kind of noise rock part a bit, but one thing I really like about it is how the beginning of the album is so simple with just like the guitar and the bass almost having a little conversation back and forth and then everything kind of drops in.
Yeah, no, it is. I have always liked Stereo. I think it's a great way to start the album. And dude, I definitely had my time with Pavement. I know you said you pull them out every few months.
Oh, dude. Yeah. God. My time is still ongoing with that. I listen to all their albums.
I probably haven't listened to them for years. I mean, it's probably been years. It's just for some reason, I don't know. It's just certain bands. They just kind of, I'll be flipping through my list. And for some reason you just kind of scroll past them a little bit.
Well, it's weird because to me, I'm typically into stuff that is, I really like a lot of like big kind of complex. Why? Not all the time. I mean, I still like a lot of punk, but for some things I like big production. I like effects. I like things that are done in the studio that are just interesting because it's a different type of environment where you can do these things. Mm. Dude, Pavement like goes against all these things, for some reason they're still one of my favorite bands because they're like the underdogs, man. Like They really are the underdogs. And I like the simplicity of what they do and the fact that they're not trying to be anything more than what they are.
The beauty of the plan is it is so simple. So.
Yeah. Well, and dude, listen to it. Very rarely will you ever hear an effect on Malcolmus's vocals. I don't think at all in this album. But if you listen to Pavement's catalog, yeah. You very rarely will ever hear an effect on his vocals. They're okay. Very rarely doubled.
Yeah. Okay. There is one song, and I have it in my notes. I don't see it off the bat. We'll get to it. Where I think, I don't know if it's an effect on his vocals or if it's just something in the music and it really sounds like it's with the vocals. So I'll be interested to hear your
thoughts sure.
on that one. But moving on, track number two, Shady Lane / Jay Versus, which we talked about a little bit, I think, before we got into it. But dude, this song to me has a real, like, this punk poppy feel, like when it starts off.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's just kind of like a funny song. I just think.
Well, and another thing too is listen to their lyrics. Like, their lyrics are very much reminiscent of Beck, where if you were to read them line by line, they sound good together.
Right.
The words do, but rarely do they does a line to the next line make a whole lot of sense.
Doesn't add up, kind of, right?
And yeah. I think in this album more so than others, because there's other songs that they do where they are clearly there's a dialogue or there's something that's being followed. But a lot of the ones on here are just kind of.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that listening to it again. I'm like, geez, I could not tell you what this song is about. There's little snippets here and there.
But overall, as a whole, I know what you mean. But I always did like the song or the line in Shady Lane where he says a redder shaded neck on a whiter shade of trash. That's pretty good.
Right. Well, and that is cool. There are some really good lines. And later I have a few that I picked out that I'm like, oh, okay. You got it.
Now, J versus S, there's been debates, or not debates, but I guess conversations on what is J versus S. And I think the running thing is that it's their version of what it would sound like if Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr. was playing with Steve Malcolmus.
Whoa.
Well, based on like the sound of that and how the guitars are and everything, I think that the people had generally think of the J for being from Jay Maskus from.
That's crazy, dude.
Yeah. Wow,
that's
so if anyone knows that one, like, dude, definitely
like, subscribe,
comment below on that one.
Yeah. Do. All right, track number three, Transport is Arranged, which is always nice. I mean, this is before Uber and all that stuff.
You got a ride.
Mm-hmm. Dude, this is just kind of it's a slower song. It's got some trippiness to it. I find the guitar
has a real
sort of like dreamy feel, and then at the end it just kind of rocks. But
That's the thing. They're just you think you have it nailed down what it sounds like, and then it just gets into.
No, you don't.
And this is where I think that they're using the Mellotron flutes.
Oh, right. I remember you saying that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be good to know. So comment below if you know. But yeah, I can't. I certainly can't speak to that. But it's.
Now some of these ones, if you wonder what some of the jams or other versions sound like, there is a version out there that you can listen to now or you could buy, but it's their super deluxe edition called Bright in the Corners, the Nicene Credence edition. Because, wow, and they say that because you know, coming from Catholic school, about the Nicene Creed. Well, in the cover, they have their picture and it doesn't say, you know, like the band, it just says the Nicene Creeders for like over their nice, picture. Dude. So they just, you know, they're just weird stuff like that in there. So that's
they should have called their super deluxe, to, like Bright in the Corners. Should have called it Bright in the Corners. The corners are white.
That yeah. Yeah. Cool. So there's just other versions of some of this stuff, because I think it was, is this our, what's next? Is next type? Oh, Type Slowly is coming. But there's a version of Type Slowly in there that's almost like country. And yeah, so they just did all kinds of weird stuff. But Date with IKEA is next.
Date with IKEA. Dude, first of all, was IKEA a thing in 1997? Like, I don't know. Maybe I didn't. How long has that been around?
Dude, it's been around. I don't know. I can look it up, but I'm going to guess since the 70s.
That's crazy.
Or 80s.
Man. I mean, I know. Well, that's. I had no idea. I guess I didn't hear about it till I went to college. Like, I just didn't. I don't know.
Well, yeah. Why would you? Dude, yeah. It was founded in 1943.
Whoa. Wow. Good for
But I don't know how long it's been around in the US, but
good for the founders.
Sounds like quite a while.
It does. Yeah. Oh, so dude, all right. You know the like the little like intro somewhere sort of like picking in the beginning? Mm-hmm. The tick 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 tick. So when I first heard that again this time, in after I went back and listened to the song that it reminded me of, I was like, yeah, okay, maybe it doesn't sound a lot. But when I first heard that, I was like, dude, it reminds me sort of the beginning of the song by The Outfield, Your Love. And then I went and listened to it, and I was like, okay, yeah, I guess it doesn't really. That's but maybe funny. It's just kind of the guitar picking sort of pattern, like the way they did that in the beginning. So, but then when you listen to it, I'm like, yeah, it doesn't really sound like it at all. But anyways, in my crazy mind, it did.
Yeah, I can see if you just the very, very beginning. Now, this is one of two songs on the album written by Scott Canberg, otherwise known as Spiral Stairs.
And man, I like this. But, well, we'll talk about the other one, but I like them. I like their good songs.
Yeah, I do too. And he's like kind of the George Harrison. Like, Malcolmus is basically like Lennon and McCartney, and then Scott Canberg's kind of like George Harrison, where he just has certain songs in there now and again. And I like his songs too. He's done some solo stuff, but I think what's notable is I believe he's playing an electric 12 string at the beginning because the guitar has kind of more of like a nice, thicker, jangly kind of sound.
It's very, that's what I was going to ask you. So this is actually the song that it sounded to me like there is distortion on the vocals.
Is a little bit. Okay. But that's not Malcolmus.
That's true.
And that's why I made the point about Malcolmus, because I've listened to some of his other stuff, like Steve Malcolmus and the Jicks or Solo, which I think we saw them open up for Radiohead.
Once. Yeah.
And even in that, he rarely does anything to his voice.
Yeah, they are pretty clean. You're right. Now that I think about it. Yep, you're right. They are pretty
but
clean.
Yeah, there's definitely distortion on Canberg's voice in this one. Mm-hmm. And they have this, they have a funny video, I guess, when Matador released this super deluxe Enormo Dome edition of this.
Yeah.
They did this promo called A Date with IKEA, where like fans of the band would have to send in pictures and stories about like their shitty apartment and why they needed help. And then the winner got a date with one of the band members to go spend $500 a $500 gift thing for IKEA. Dude,
that's pretty cool, man.
I like that. I watched the video. So this lady won it, and she went to IKEA with Bob Nastanovich.
Wow. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
Who would have thought? So here we go. Next song, Old to Begin.
It's
so old.
Dude, this one kind of the same thing, has a real kind of subdued intro, but it does get a little thicker at times.
Yeah, it is definitely a little more sort of melancholy, kind of, I guess I would say, to begin with. And he even sings the words like, you know, time came that we drifted apart. So not that there's...
Finding our identical twins. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but again, this is one of those songs that does sort of have this... I'll call it the in utero sort of like feel.
Yeah, to it, where it goes to. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hear you.
It doesn't even there's part where he sort of sings a little kind of, you know, sloppily almost.
Oh, and he's very sloppy. Yeah. Right. And that's the thing. He doesn't have, by definition, some amazing voice.
No, he doesn't. So if people are watching this and you've never listened to Pavement, I think his vocal, it could be said, his voice is
like not
for everyone.
That's true, though.
It fits the music and the sound very, it does. Very well.
And in the other music that he comes up with, also it fits great. But yeah, I know it's not for everybody. And it's funny, I watched a video of them perform in stereo on Conan O'Brien, like back when this was released. And they're just kind of weird, man. Like they don't have this amazing stage presence that is just like commanding attention. They just kind of do their thing.
Yeah. I can't say I'm surprised. I mean, they just seem like, I mean, their music is, I really like their music, but it's not this, you know, big kind of grand, like they're just like this good, they're just this good band.
Yeah. You know? They're kind of like slackers, you know, they're not like not like Mick and Keith.
Yeah. They're not like the podcast version of us or the, that's or the opposite of what I said that.
Yeah.
All right, Grim. We got to type, but make sure you type.
Type slowly.
Yeah, so good.
Oh, I was just going to say, I like the song. I kind of like some of it. Sounds like synthy kind of effects in here where they have some of these like, which I think he does with the delay. And he was always also noted for using this pedal that was out in the 90s. That has become a like treasured thing if you can get your hands on one called the Love Tone Meatball. Whoa. And it's a big pedal, but it does all sorts of amazing stuff. Like it is a highly sought after like electric guitar players collector kind of pedal.
Oh, so if, you know, for all you
love tone meatball
fans. Lovers, yeah, like dude, this song is for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say, this is one of those songs, again, where, dude, it does kind of remind me of Lou Reed a little bit. But and just like we kind of talked about in the previous song, you know, he doesn't have like this great voice. But it fits the sound so well. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Now, Grim, next song. I bet this isn't, I mean, this is, I don't know, is this your favorite Pavement song? It's probably mine.
I don't know, man. It's a toss up between this one and one called Hands Off the Bayou, which is not even on an album. It is on like the super deluxe special disc for Crooked Rain. Awesome song. But this is a deep cut, but this is the one that got me into the band. I'll tell you that.
This is the one, man. Yeah.
So I'm not scratching this, like, you know, spoiler alert. This is not going to be my scratch.
Yeah. For me, I think either Embassy Row or Platform Blues off of Terror Twilight. Those are probably my two favorite ones. But yeah, dude, as soon as I heard this song, and I'm sure I heard from you, I was not watching the skateboarding video. That's not what did it for me.
It was cool.
Dude, I actually would love to see that video now. I bet the video is great. Right.
Oh, I bet, dude. And you know what's, dude, I still watch skateboarding videos on YouTube. I'm not a good skateboarder, but I in my head, like, I really wish I was, because they do some awesome shit.
Yeah. Well, dude, this song, the way it kind of starts slow, builds up, and dude, once that, it just kind of, everything drops for a second.
And it reminds me of Radiohead with that. Oh, man. You know?
Dude, it is phenomenal. And this is, I will say, this is one of those songs where, again, I love this album, but sometimes I will just put this song on where
I need to hear this song. It's so good. It's kind of weird. It sounds like it's about like spies almost. Coups and regimes, things like that.
Stuff that makes the world go around.
And this one actually does seem to have somewhat of a consistent theme throughout the song, even though the lyrics don't necessarily tell a story. There's at least this sort of consistent subject matter.
Like, it's kind of like if you did enough acid, it would make a lot of sense.
Even without it, it's just like a big international espionage sort of thing. Yeah,
good James Bond movie. All right, track number 8, Blue Hawaiian. Now, dude, this song is funny because, you know, you ever have those songs on an album where, just like I said, NBC Row, like, oh man, sometimes I'll just put that song on.
Yeah.
Where you put that on. But then it always kind of rolls into the next one. So it's like, I feel like I've heard, like, I like this song a lot, but I feel like I've heard the beginning of it million times. You know, I'm like, I know that one.
And this is a slow song, but I've always really liked the groove of it. The Rhodes kind of got the echo on it, and it, you know, it's just got a nice groove, and the bass carries the whole song.
dude.
You know, I like that. They use the guitar not so much as like the driving force in this at all.
Which is nice. Got to change that up, right? So, dude, one of the lines that has always stuck out to me, and I don't know why. Well, I actually probably do know why, because I was probably like dating someone at some time and I was really into them. And then, you know, they were awesome to me. So, and then
your cheeks have lost their luster.
Dude, your cheeks have lost their luster. Like, there's just, it's such a good line, because it's like, man, it's weird how that happens in relationships sometimes, where I'm like, wow, I was so like enamored with someone. Yeah, and then sure. Now you're just like, yeah, I'm good. Like,
yeah,
you know, you blew it. Yep. Sorry. Not sorry.
and then
you're 40 verse, and you're still single and it's awesome.
Well, yeah. And then in the next verse, I love it, because then they bring it back and they're talking about music, dude. The tones are grouped in clusters, which is like a chord. The tones are grouped
in clusters. Yeah, dude, it is really funny, isn't it? I do love that. I do. All right. We are underused.
Yeah, again, not knowing, it could have been a patch, but it's at least a, if not a real one, a mimic of a harpsichord in the beginning, which is kind of interesting, going through like a phaser.
That's, and, I was going to ask you that, because it feels like it almost has like sort of this synth sound to it.
That's the phaser. So it could be a real recording of a harpsichord, or it could be a really good synth patch of a harpsichord or a sample and just gone through a phaser.
Gotcha. Well, and then, dude,
that might be the love tone meatball, dude. It could be, because they had a phaser.
Got the phaser. I love at the end of this song, kind of, or towards the end, you hear the sort of the whole group. It sounds like a room of people kind of singing in the background. I think that's a really, really nice touch.
Yeah, and it's the one, and I don't know if it's about like a, it has something to do with the wedding, right?
I think so. Well, yeah, you've been such a great host.
Yeah, and then it talks about the this wedding so invitation. Prepared. Yeah, and this wedding invitation. Let's thank the host. Yeah,
the most.
Yeah,
I know. So then we go to track 10. Grim, was it Passat?
Passat. Yeah, like a Volkswagen Passat.
Passat. The Passat dream.
That's because it's like, dude, he says that's the car to his soul or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. If he'd give you all the millions in gold if you'd only let him have his role. Like, the dude just wants a Passat, dude.
Yeah. Dude, I love this song. This is, what's his name? This is his second Camber, song. Yeah. Yeah, it's Camber. I think it's great, man. I'm a huge fan too. Of it. It has kind of a sexy feel to it. There's something about it where I was listening. I was like, I don't know. Maybe a little darker, or just has like this cool, like a cool feel to it. Where you're like, all right.
And I really like when he says the dealer with the jingling song will never match my price reduction. Like,
it's like, yeah.
So maybe he's selling a Passat. I don't know.
It's got to be it. Maybe he's a used car dealer and on the side. It's, you know, anything's possible. Then we go to track 11. What?
Starlings in the, of the slipstream.
Of the slipstream. Okay. Yeah. Dude, I don't know if some of the lyrics, you probably couldn't get away with them.
Like the today, spy cam, like, in the sorority. In the
sorority.
That's what I was going to say. Darlings
on the split screen. Yeah, that's not creepy.
I know. That line has always stuck out to me as really kind of odd. Maybe there is. But then Malcolmus doesn't seem like a real weirdo at the same point, so I don't really know the meaning or whatever behind that.
Probably singing, it's probably from someone else's point of view. That's got to be what it is, right?
Yeah, that's like what you do when you just when you write a song that's just offensive. You're like, well, it was from someone else's point of view.
I read about the story in a magazine.
Yeah, right? Yeah,
it wasn't me, I swear.
Yeah.
Well, then we wrap up. Well, this I found this is interesting. The song Finn. Right.
Yeah.
But if you happen to have a non-US pressing of this album, the song is called Infinite Spark, which I find interesting. I mean, what goes into the thought process there? Like, hey, okay, on the US tracks, we're going to call it Finn, but everything outside of the US, we're going to call it something else. Like, you know, but maybe I don't get it, but I don't have to get it.
It's
an interesting little thing. It also, it is a good way to tell if you have a US pressing or not. So there's that.
Yeah, there's a lot there.
But what do I have on here? What are my notes? I got to look at my notes. Yeah, dude, the song is it's pretty slow and
it is.
A little sorrowful. And then so kind of towards the end, it gets into this sort of weirdness.
You know, a lot of space, exploring the space.
Guitars become disjointed. But dude, it ends with this like really long fade out. Like it fades out for probably at least 30 seconds or so. So, you know, Street Spirit, fade out, man. Fade out, man. But that wraps up the tracks. I feel like you should probably scratch first on this one, because I feel like this is, you know, an album that I love it, but I feel like you have a special connection because you know.
It does hold a special place in my little heart. I will say that. I had to think about this one a lot because I've been, you know, this more than 20 years I've been listening to this.
Long time.
And I've been listening to it as an album. If I had to get rid of one, and as you saw, my CD is in good shape, so this is truly an exercise because I didn't have to yet. Starlings of the Slipstream.
Overtime.
Oh, no, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
Oh, yes. Man. Okay. All right.
So I'm going there as well, my friend. My reasoning is, here's the thing. I personally feel like I would love if they would actually ended the album with Passat Dream. I think that is a great song to end the album with. And I think if you would have kept it at 10, because Starlings of the Slipstream doesn't do a whole lot for me. I think Finn is a good song. I think it's okay to end it with that album.
But yeah, man, it's a good ending song.
It's a good closer. But man, I feel like if they would have kept it at those 10 tracks, this album would have been so unbelievably strong. And I just really like that Passat Dream a lot, that I think it would be a great way to end the album. But since we're only scratching one, right? Well, we could go to overtime. And if we go to overtime, I'm scratching Finn. So we're going to overtime. What are you scratching? Are we going to?
Yeah, dude.
Islanders Capital is just.
Wow.
Oh, man.
And we don't go any farther than that.
No.
But I will say, let's just hypothetically, for argument's sake, say that we have a 10 song album now that does end with Passat Dream.
Yeah.
Now this is unsanctioned. This what is kind of is if we that? Were to go into a shootout, maybe you could say. But what would you scratch out of the 10 that you consider the strong ones if you had to?
I would probably go with either Ode to Begin or Transport is Arranged.
Okay.
I can't decide. You?
Damn, that's a real shit pickle there, dude.
It is.
I don't know.
It's a couple like moment of silences there.
Dude, yeah, because it's
Charlie Watts, ladies and gentlemen.
Maybe type slowly, but again, we didn't have to go there. Just theoretically speaking,
we didn't have to, but we did. So.
But you can tell by my pause and just blank stare how much I really had to struggle with that question.
Did really struggle with that question,
and we weren't being that guy saying I wouldn't scratch any. It's perfect.
Masterpiece. It's a masterpiece.
So.
Course is a masterpiece. That's why we're talking about it.
Jeez. Yep. We have brought some light into the corners here and brightened them up. So.
Hopefully your day is brighter. Ours is brighter.
Because of you. So with that said, it's time to go. The Dude and Grim Show.
Scratch a Track is produced by The Dude and Grim. Additional music provided by Moore and the Timms. Copyright 2021, The Dude and Grim Show.